And here we go. Hour number two of the Rob Brown Show goes now. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Great to have you on a Monday a.m. The sun rises over the mountains of the upstate of South Carolina. We are glad to have you here. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo with you. 7 o'clock straight up in the a.m. portion of the day. We got a lot to get into. We got to continue to break down the wins of both the Gamecocks and the Tigers from this weekend. Both teams with an opportunity to keep themselves alive in the playoff discussion. Yes, I do believe that there is an outside chance that South Carolina could fight their way in. They did step one by getting their third consecutive dub over a Southeastern Conference top 25 ranked team as they finish off Mizzou's time inside of the top 25. The Gamecocks now up to number 19 in the AP poll. We will find out tomorrow night where they rank in the playoff rankings, and I've made the point many times. I think if you are, as Heather Dinich did a couple of weeks ago, if you are going to make the argument that a three-loss Georgia team, should Georgia have lost to Tennessee, they did not, obviously. We'll talk about that one coming up. If you were going to make the argument that a three-loss Georgia team should have gotten in, then I think you absolutely have to make the argument that a three-loss South Carolina team could, should, would get in. We'll talk about that coming up in a little while. Clemson, of course, still very much alive for an at-large bid. They are alive for an ACC title bid, but obviously would need a little bit of help. They did uphold their end of the bargain with that win over Pitt. And, of course, one of those two teams, this discussion will come to its conclusion, at least regarding the at-large bid, in just a couple of weekends when they get together for the Palmetto Bowl. So we'll talk about that coming up later on in the show. But it is 7:02 in the morning. You have just a tick over 57 minutes until you got to get to the office, until you got to get yourself behind that laptop or standing desk. If you're one of those standing desk people, I think I got to be a standing desk guy. I haven't decided to commit yet. They're not cheap. I think I might put one at the house. We'll see. Anyway, you got to pop off those emails, and then you're going to walk down the hallway. You're going to go to the water cooler. You're going to glug, glug, glug yourself a glass of water, and you're going to talk sports with your coworkers. And if you're going to do that, you need to know what's going on. And if you need to know what's going on, you need this. It is the water cooler cheat sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever it might be. This is what you'll be talking about. Let's kick it off with item number one. NFL yesterday, a very busy day. Of course, we will conclude week 11 tonight with the Houston Texans taking on the Dallas Cowboys in a Lone Star Cup competition. But a lot of interesting results in the NFL yesterday. It felt like the Chicago Bears were going to end a 10-game losing streak to the Green Bay Packers yesterday. Alas, 'twas not to be. Why? Because the Pack were able to get a late score on the board to take a one-point lead. Here come the Chicago Bears, drive it down into field goal range and have a kick blocked. They fall 20-19. The Jacksonville Jaguars take their worst loss in franchise history. The Detroit Lions knock off Jacksonville 52-6. Jared Goff, 412 yards and four touchdowns in this one. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 161 yards of receiving, and a pair of those Goff tutties went to St. Brown. And there is talk that you will see a coaching change sometime in the very near future for the Jacksonville Jaguars, though not a general manager change. We're going to talk about that coming up later because the name that is projected to lead the head coaching position search for the Jags could save Trent Baalke's job. We'll talk about that. We had a couple of other interesting ones yesterday. The New Orleans Saints, 35-14 winners over the Cleveland Browns. Darren Rizzi becomes the second head coach for the Saints since, the first since Sean Payton to start their head coaching tenure at 2-0. Taysom Hill had himself a day, 248 all-purpose yards and 3 touchdowns on the day. The Jets allow Anthony Richardson in his return to the QB1 role to go for 272 yards on 20 of 30 passing through the day. The Colts down the Jets 28-27. The Jets fall to 3-8, and any talk of the second half rally is effectively gone. Russell Wilson leads the Steelers to a whole lot of field goals yesterday, but all they needed was a whole lot of field goals. 18-16, the Steelers knock off the Ravens. The Ravens suddenly 7-4. The Ravens suddenly going ice cold, and the Steelers are not just 8-2, but 8-2 at the top of that division. The Broncos devastate the Atlanta Falcons yesterday, 38-6. Your final in that one. Bo Nix, his first 300-yard game, comes against Atlanta, 307 yards and 4 touchdowns for the young rook. As I think Matt Ryan's finally starting to show that age that I was. Excuse me, Matt Ryan. If Matt Ryan was out there, they might have had a better chance. Kirk Cousins, not a great game as Denver destroys Atlanta. The Seahawks walk it off with Geno Smith. He scrambles in a game-winning touchdown in the dying breath of that game. The Seahawks knock off the 49ers 20-17 despite the reemergence of Christian McCaffrey at the running back position. He's been back for a couple of weeks, but finally started to look like McCaffrey again. Didn't matter. Geno and the boys get it done. Both of those teams now 5-5. Last night, late, the Bills and the Chiefs, their first loss, 30-21 is your final. Josh Allen, 27-42, 62, and a touchdown. Also scrambled in a tutty inside the last couple of minutes of that game. Gave the Bills that 2-score lead. That made it a daunting challenge for even the great Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes had the ball with about a minute and a half left to go, needed a touchdown and an onside kick to climb in. Instead, picked off in the last Chiefs possession. So they fall to 9-1. The Bills improve to 9-2. And then we wrapped it up last night. Y'all, the LA Chargers may not be a joke. I thought it was going to take Harbaugh a year, maybe two, to try to round this team into shape. But the Chargers, they go beat Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow tossed 28 of 50 for 356 and 3 touchdowns, and the Bengals still can't win. J.K. Dobbins fights his way into the end zone, also in the dying minutes of that game, to give the Chargers a 1-score lead. They're able to keep Joey B and the boys out of the end zone late last night. So L.A. improves to 7-3. They are now dropped the Bengals to 4-7. I don't think the Bengals had but one more loss available to them going into that game. I think the only way Joey B is going back to the playoffs is if the Bengals remain perfect. They are third place in that division and a full 3 games back of Baltimore, who is now a full 2 games back of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Buffalo at 9-2 and Kansas City at 9-1 out front in the AFC. Over in the NFC, the Eagles 8-2. The Detroit Lions at 9-1 are the two front runners. And all of a sudden, the NFC South looks very interesting as well. Atlanta is 6-5. The Bucks are 4-6. The Saints are 4-7. And the Panthers are 3-7. All 4 teams within just a couple of games each other. It could be a division that flips on its head in just one more weekend. We'll see how it plays out. Let's move to item number 2. Your college football AP top 25 poll dropped last night. The Oregon Ducks, despite a scare from the Wisconsin Badgers, do remain the consensus number 1 team in America. They have all 62 first place votes in the AP poll. They just edge out the Buckeyes of Ohio State, who check in at number 2. They are separated from number three, Texas, by just 73 points in the poll for week number 13. The Buckeyes, number two, Texas, three, Penn State, 9-1, only lost to the number two team, Ohio State, checks in at number four. Undefeated Indiana, Hoosiers. They are number five at 10-0. Notre Dame, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Tennessee. Round out your top 10. Of course, everybody from 7 down to 10 is sitting on a pair of losses so far. That includes Georgia, Ole Miss, and Tennessee. The highest ranked ACC team is 9-1 Miami. At number 11, SMU is the second highest ranked ACC team. At number 13, both of those teams are 9-1. Wedged in the middle at number 12, 9-1 Boise State. Ashton Janti had another day this weekend. A&M, the Colt, is at number 15. Colorado, Dion's boys, all the way up to number 16 in the poll at 8-2 after another tremendous win for the Buffs. They find themselves one spot ahead of Clemson, who checks in at 17. Army wedged just in front of South Carolina, the 9-0 Golden Knights at 18. And the Gamecocks at 7-3. The Gamecocks are the highest ranked three-loss team in America at number 19, 7-3, one spot ahead of 9-2 Tulane at 20. Arizona State, Iowa State, UNLV, Illinois, and Washington State round out your top 25. How will they stack up against the playoff top 25? We will find out tomorrow. Let's go to item number three. It took an overtime win for the Washington Capitals to get another dub. That overtime win was very good. Not overtime win. The regulation win was very good for the Washington Capitals. 5-2. It was extra time on the ice for Alex Ovechkin. He notched his first hat trick of the season. Why, Rob, are you talking about a regular season NHL game as an item on the water cooler cheat sheet? That answer? Because Alex Ovechkin knocked his first hat trick of the season. And his first hat trick since December 31st of 2022. He did that against the Canadiens. This one, the 31st of his career, the sixth most in NHL history. Vegas became the 19th team that Ovechkin has scored a hat trick on. The 39-year-old completed the effort with an empty net goal with 37 seconds left and with 866 career goals post-hat trick. He is now just 29 goals away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's all-time NHL goal scoring record. Avi said after the game, quote, "I think we had pretty good opportunities in previous games to do that. So finally, we did it." Yes, you did it, Alex Ovechkin. That was his 16th road hat trick. The only players in NHL history with more hat tricks on a roadie are Hall of Fame forwards Mario Lemieux, who had 19, Wayne Gretzky, who had 19, and Marcel Dion, who had 17 in the game. Ovechkin's effort pushed him closer to another, albeit less grand, Gretzky record as well. According to ESPN, with his 176th career multi-goal game, he is now just 13 shy of Gretzky's NHL milestone of 189. If you are the person who tunes in for personality and not event, Alex Ovechkin is the guy to go keep an eye on. We're going to talk more about him as he approaches the Gretzky milestone, a milestone that I imagine Ovechkin will put into the rearview mirror sometime during the 2024 season as we transition later in the year out of football. Hockey will start to make more of an appearance on the show, and I suspect at that point Ovechkin will begin to threaten that number. We will find out. There's your water cooler cheat sheet, top three sports stories that you need to know this lovely Monday morning, November 18th, when we come back here in just mere moments from now. Let's talk about that Gamecock win over Missouri. Didn't need to be that close. Didn't need to be that close, but it was. And a gut-out win for the Gamecocks. We got that coming up for you. We'll talk some more NFL later in the show, because what a weird weekend it was in the league. John Blau with the Post and Courier talks Clemson footy with us coming up at 8:40 this morning. And a whole lot more just around the corner on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. And I don't frequently revel in the misery of other teams, except when I do, like the Jacksonville Jaguars. Not even just because I dislike the city of Jacksonville, which I do. It's the worst place. It's because that team just refuses to stop punching itself in the groin. That team just refuses to stop making ridiculous decision after ridiculous decision. The Jags, 2 years ago, under general manager Trent Baalke. And by the way, I'm coming to the South Carolina thing, but got a bit of a short segment here. Want to give it a little bit more time, so I'm going to push that to the next segment to wrap the hour. The Jags, 2 years ago, under GM Trent Baalke, came out after they had drafted Trevor Lawrence, so a handful of years ago, and said, we think this might be the best Jacksonville team ever assembled. Last year, through about halfway through the season, looked like they might have been right. Kind of looked like that team was on the edge, becoming a very good franchise. And then there was a late season collapse. A collapse that I assume Jacksonville fans sent like an edible arrangement up to the Philadelphia Eagles. Because the Eagles were a Super Bowl front runner and had an even greater collapse. If it wasn't for the Eagles last year, the Jacksonville Jaguars likely would have been a team that was getting a lot of publicity that they didn't want. But they stayed out of the limelight thanks to Philly. Nobody really talked about them, and so nothing changed. Yesterday, the Jacksonville Jaguars allowed the Detroit Lions to put up over 600 yards of offense and put up a 50-burger on them. After the game was over, of course, as is expected, because the Jags are bad, there was a conversation about a change at head coach. And why wouldn't there be, right? New Orleans just did exactly that. They are 2-0, including a win over the division leaders in that two-game stretch. Sometimes it just takes a move. And so there were discussions about moving on from Doug Peterson, which at this point I think you got to do. If for no other reason than to try to salvage Trevor Lawrence. Now, Trevor did not play. Mac Jones has played the last couple of weeks. Trevor's been nursing a shoulder injury. And let's keep it a buck. There is absolutely no reason to rush him back from that injury. You're out of the mix, all right? You're not a playoff team. So there's no sense in hurrying him back. And if you believe that a coaching change is on the horizon, as most of us do at this point for Jacksonville, I don't want to bring him back under the old guy. Like, let's make sure that whoever takes over as the interim HC, let's make sure that whoever takes over has an opportunity to work with a fully healthy Trevor Lawrence, has an opportunity to change up the offense with a fully healthy TL16. I think that's the right play. So it doesn't shock me that Mac Jones got another start. There was talk that Trevor might be ready to start this game, that he might be able to play, gets in listed on the injury report. He's not available, which to me makes 100% sense. There was no reason to bring him back. Well, after the game was over yesterday, I was watching Sunday Night Football last night, well, watching Football Night in America, whatever the show is, and Mike Florio comes on. And Mike Florio was asked if there are pink slips about to be handed out in Jacksonville, because the talk is not just that Doug Peterson's got to go. The talk is that general manager Trent Baalke might have to go too. Peterson was a Baalke hire. Trevor Lawrence was a Baalke draftee. Just about everybody on this team, he's been there long enough, that just about everybody on this team is put in place by that GM. And if this team is that bad, and the head coach is that bad, that you're talking about making an in-season change, which is absolutely the mark of disastrous, then wouldn't the GM have to go too? And most of us, myself included, thought, yeah, this, if I'm Shad Khan, this is a complete and total locker room revamp. Everyone connected to the 2023 and 2024 Jacksonville Jaguars gotta go, gotta be gone. Well, Mike Florio last night said that might not be the case if Baalke can make one move that a lot of people are pushing for. So the conversation, according to Florio, is that Baalke could keep his job if he's able to hire the hoodie. please do it, Jacksonville. Please do it, because there are two possible outcomes. The first outcome is that Bill Belichick shows up. Hoodie is the guy that many people think that he is with his fistful of rings. And he's able to actually do it. In which case, he would save Trevor Lawrence. In which case, he would revamp the career of TL16. In which case, he would turn Trevor Lawrence into that generational player that the Jaguars thought he was when they drafted him. And he just, let's call it what it is, has not been. And again, I stand on the belief that this is not Trevor Lawrence's fault. I stand on the belief that the combination of garbage decisions that has been made by this franchise year after year after year since they drafted him has made it impossible for anybody to succeed. Forget a guy that hasn't known anything except drama and bad decision-making around the franchise since the day he put on the Jaguar colors for the very first time, which is, again, Trevor Lawrence, a dude that came in and was partnered up with arguably the worst NFL coach of all time, Urban Meyer, and it just has not gotten better ever since then. It just has not gotten better. So that's option one. Hoodie comes in. He is the mythical creature that all of you believe that he is. Not as the royal you, not each of you in the armada, obviously. But he comes in. He's that guy. The Jags are fixed, and Trevor Lawrence now looks like a superhero. Or the opposite is true. What I think is going to happen ends up ultimately happening. And that is Bill Belichick comes in and once again proves that it was Tom Brady who did New England. It was all Brady. Because, and I don't know why this doesn't get interjected into the conversation more often. Brady leaves New England. Brady goes to Tampa. Brady wins Super Bowl. Brady leaves New England. New England drafts the next guy, Mac Jones. And now Mac Jones is a Jacksonville Jaguar because it didn't work out. Bill Belichick could not gain any traction with the New England Patriots after Tom Brady left. Now, there are going to be folks who are going to argue that, you know, well, hoodie. Tom Brady has said, Bill Belichick has said in years gone by that the game plan was always, what can we do to help Tom Brady be successful? And of course it was. Of course it was. The guy was a wizard with the football. You do what you need to do to make sure that 12 can do what he needs to do to carry you to Super Bowl rings. And by all accounts, that was Tom Brady. I've been getting in the last couple of years, well, I guess months really, to Julian Edelman's podcast, and he talks about this a lot. But he talks constantly about how when Hoodie was there, Hoodie would basically rip guys. He was all over dudes to make sure they were doing it right. But has also said the goal was always to make sure that Tom had what Tom needed for Tom to win. Now, he did say Hoodie was in Tom's face, too. If Tom Brady made a dumb mistake, Hoodie came down on him just like he would a third-string practice squad player. But there are plenty of stories around the locker room of Hoodie saying, hey, this is what we do to make 12 win. Let's go win. You bring that guy down, we are going to find out if Trevor Lawrence is him or not. Because Hoodie's going to make sure everything's set up for Trevor Lawrence to succeed. There's one of two outcomes. Trevor Lawrence is saved and revived in Jacksonville, or we can end the Hoodie v. Brady discussion forever because he's going to go there and he can't overcome Shad Khan, Trent Baalke in the gang. We'll find out. All right, let's talk about this Gamecock win over Mizzou when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. Your final is the Gamecocks knock off Mizzou. Their third consecutive win over an SEC top 25 team. Lenoris Sellers was a dog in this game. 353 yards, 5 touchdown passes, and 1 interception. Now, just so we keep it a buck, context and nuance matters in sport. The one pick was awful. I mean, it was awful. But my man completed 21 passes of the 9 that he did not complete. There was really only one that was, maybe two, that was like genuinely a bad pass. Raheem Rocket Sanders, 19 carries, 53 yards. I do want to point out that the game-winning touchdown that was scored by Rocket Sanders was one of 3 catches for 21. Yes, a shuttle pass is a forward pass. That honestly should probably be counted as a rushing touchdown for Rocket Sanders, but as it was flipped forward, it was a pass. If you missed it, late in the game, with the Gamecocks down inside of a minute and a half to play, Lenora Sellers led the boys the length of the field. They get down inside the 15, and that was the game-winning touchdown. They would go up 34-30. Mizzou would try to push the length of the field back the other way and come up shy. South Carolina walks out with the W. Another ranked W, by the way. After the game, it was pointed out to Shane Beamer that that was indeed the 3rd consecutive win over a top 25 team, the first time it's ever happened in school history. Here's the exchange he had with an intrepid young reporter after the game. Did you catch the voice of that intrepid young reporter?
That would be Cole Bryson from Wire to Wire.
That is absolutely correct, which you can hear right here on the Fan Upset every afternoon from 3 till 7 p.m. Cole Bryson and Diesel. Diesel making his triumphant return from vacation today. But yes, a clip of Shane Beamer that went viral on social media this weekend amongst the Gamecock fans, generated by our own Cole Bryson. Listen to the smooth, dulcet tones of one Cole Bryson. But he's absolutely correct. Do you think Cole pulled that stat himself? Do you think Cole Bryson knew that going in? Do you think Steve Fink hit him with that as he walked into the press room?
Diesel got it for him.
Okay, fair enough. Diesel texted Cole on vacation, was like, hey, you should ask him this. All right, either way, generates a nice little talking point from Shane Beamer there. And it's correct. They have. And again, I've already made my apology to Shane Beamer. I feel compelled to do it again to keep it a buck with you. Because post the Ole Miss loss, I came in here ready to kick stuff down. Just might be the best not be the best expression to use with Shane. I came in here ready to flip some tables after that Ole Miss loss. Because my thought was, how do you let it go that wrong? When you've got the momentum, how do you let it go that wrong? After the LSU game, how do you let it go that wrong? And Lonzo completely correctly said, hey, why don't you relax? It's one game. Said, I don't know, man. It's lack of discipline, lack of patience, boring, predictable play calling. Don't see development out of Lenora Sellers. Lonzo said, relax. One game. Let's see what they do coming off the break. It came off the breaks different football team. Different football team. Got the win over Akron and have been a different football team. Now, I do want to point out that coming into this game, this was a top 25 Missouri team that was 7-2. And it wasn't like it was a bad 7-2. I mean, their two losses were bad losses. They lost to a Texas A&M team coming off a loss that was making its way back up towards the top 10, 11, 12, where they are now. It was to an Alabama team that had a couple of losses, was making their way back to the top 10, where they are now. Outside of that, they've sniped everybody else they needed to. Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College, and Vanderbilt. And again, like years gone by, that Vanderbilt win wouldn't be impressive. This year, pretty impressive win. It was right around the time that Vandy knocked off Alabama. They beat the Minutemen and beat them convincingly the way they should have, 45-3. They beat Auburn 21-17. They beat Oklahoma like they were supposed to. I'm not making the argument. I look at Mizzou, a team that I said to start the year, I thought was the most overrated team in the top 10, to be honest with you, to start the year. I did not think the Missouri Tigers were a playoff threat this year. And I took some heat for that. I don't think Eli Drinkwitz is cracked up to be a top-tier coach. I think he's good enough. But I think he's the type of coach that, much like Jimbo Fisher for many years, he's the type of coach that needs a generational talent around him to get it done. This is the same thing I said about Jimbo Fisher for years. This is why when A&M hired Jimbo Fisher, I told him at the time, you're not going to win under this guy unless he goes and finds a Jameis Winston. He found a Jameis Winston at Florida State. And by the way, what happened the second year of Jameis Winston once everybody kind of was able to figure out the way to stop that cat? Not much. Disappointing second year. So that's the category I put Eli Drinkwitz in. I think he's fine, but I think he needs a generational quarterback. And respectfully to Mizzou, I don't think Mizzou is the type of school that is able to go attract the type of recruits that are the most likely to become generational quarterbacks. They're going to have to be a team that stumbles into one. That being said, it's not a bad football team. They are the type of football team that is a good test. They are, as those of us that love professional wrestling would say, they are a spectacular mid-carder. They are a test mid-carder. They are the type of guy like Dolph Ziggler was for 100 years. If you want to know if a guy can go, if you want to know if a guy can carry a belt, if you want to know if a guy is a genuine marquee star, then you put him out in the ring with Dolph Ziggler. And you say, if you can go entertain this crowd, if you can be compelling with this guy, then we know you can go up a level. But if you can't go out there and be compelling with this guy, if you can't go out there with this cat and be entertaining, you're not it. How many guys did we see go out there, put on a program with a guy like a Dolph Ziggler, not make it interesting, and then they were gone? A lot. That's Mizzou. Mizzou is the Dolph Ziggler of the SEC. It's the type of team that if you go out there and make mistakes, if you go out there and you come out flat, if you're undisciplined, if your game plan isn't good, if you are not good, Mizzou's going to beat you. And if Mizzou beats you, then I know you're not there. I'm looking at you, Auburn Tigers. This is an Auburn team that ain't it. And there was a lot of optimism about this team coming into this year. And I was even ready to allow them to go through some growing pains. And I think they still are. But they lose to Mizzou, and I'm like, that's it. You lost to a mid-carder. You lost to a team that's frankly not that compelling. South Carolina figured out how to win. There were a couple of mistakes here and there, but they figured out how to gut it out. And the things that I have had concerns about, that is offensive line play. The lack of quality out of the backfield from Rocket Sanders. The painfully slow development of Lenora Sellers, a guy that we saw early in the year, I think genuinely has all of the necessary physical capabilities, and I lean on physical capabilities because I had questions about his decision-making, his ability to see the field, yada, yada, yada. But I was questioning his development because there was a, to me, shocking lack of it. Shocking lack of it. And so since then, Lenora Sellers has grown. 5 touchdown day. Lenora Sellers has grown. He's looked more comfortable. And I do think a little bit has to do, and this is kind of harkening back to what we talked about with Cade Klubnik earlier in the show when we were breaking down Clemson's win over Pitt. Back in the first hour, if you missed it, you can go to thefanupstate.com, go to the podcast section, and pull up the first hour of the show. We talked about it there. We'll talk more about it coming up in about an hour from now when we talk to John Blau of the Post and Courier. Rocket Sanders, by becoming the bowling ball, and again, he only had, 53-yard rushing in this one. It was not his best day by any stretch of the imagination. But again, context matters. Go watch Mizzou's defense early in this game. It was very clear, at least to me, the way I saw it, it was very clear to me that the defensive strategy for Mizzou was to take Rocket Sanders away from this offense. It was very clear to me that the strategy for the Tigers was Lenora Sellers is going to beat us here. Campbell and Simon and Harbor and Brown are going to beat us here. We're not going to let Rocket Sanders beat us because that's a majority of the way that South Carolina's been winning these games. is that they've been having Rocket Sanders in the clutch situations come through. Eli Drinkwitz's boys said, hey, we're not going to let that happen. We're not saying you're not going to beat us. We're just saying if you are going to beat us, you're going to beat us with Lenore Sellers. You're going to beat us with that wide receiver core that we don't think can do it. Because go wide, just about every play, somebody was locked in on Lenore Sellers. Somebody was locked in on that cat. They weren't going to let him win. So in a situation like that, a defense is saying, we are going to have one less guy available in pass coverage on any play that Rocket Sanders isn't a pass-catching threat. We're going to take a guy out of the second level of our defense. And if you beat us, you beat us. But we're going to take a second guy. We're going to take a guy out of our second level. We're going to commit him to the running back. So if you turn and hand him the ball, there's going to be a guy in his face mask immediately. That's the strategy Mizzou came in with this. And for the record, it worked. I mean, they held Rocket Sanders to 53. It worked. The problem was, Lenoris looks like a different cat. Lenoris looks like a dude who's seeing the field better, who's processing the field better, and to harken back to what I said about Cade Klubnik in the first hour, looks like a guy that has the green light to make things happen. Looks like a guy that has the green light. Hey, if it breaks down, you go, all right? If you look down the field and everybody's locked up, if everybody's locked up, that means there's a lane somewhere. There's space somewhere. Go find it. And he's looking like a guy that has gained when Lenore Sellers was running earlier in the year, it looked to me like Lenore Sellers was running as a panic last option. And now it looks to me like Lenore Sellers is running because he sees that's the decision to be made, right? This is the difference between a running quarterback and an escape quarterback. I can work with a guy. This is why I have praised Lamar Jackson for as long as I have. Lamar Jackson, for a guy that we view as a running quarterback, throws the ball a hell of a lot more than he runs. In fact, I get frustrated because there's a lot of spots where I'm like, dog, run. There's room, run. But he wants to throw the ball first. Lamar Jackson runs when Lamar Jackson sees the field opens up and realizes that running is the route here, right? I don't know how to explain this in a way that makes sense because I'm bad at this job, but to me, if I'm coaching a young quarterback, I want that quarterback to consider running as a route, right? As a route. If there was a wide receiver in that space, would you throw him the ball? And if the answer is yes, now you run. But if the answer is no, I don't want you running there, right? If you get outside the pocket, roll to the right, and you're looking and you say, all right, I got a beat on the first down marker, but there is a linebacker right there. If there was a wide receiver in that spot, would you throw the ball? If the answer is no, don't run, right? Fine, that means there's a guy somewhere because that space is covered. That space is covered by somebody who is not covering a wide receiver. That means it's likely somebody's going to be somewhere. Lenore Sellers looks like, on the run, like he is considering the run a route at this point. He looks like he is considering the space that he would run into a route. Now, still willing to drop the shoulder, and I give him praise for that, man. He runs physical, ain't no doubt. He runs in a way that linebackers have to recognize, I'm getting punished. This isn't a free hit. This is a physical tackle. But the way he's seeing the field is there. Texter said, development is painfully slow. He's a redshirt freshman playing in the SEC in a year that might be the deepest, strongest conference of all time as far as ranked teams go. I get it. But I was talking about looking at games like Old Dominion. When I see those games and I don't see progression, I'm not asking for Lenore Sellers to be all SEC. I was asking, can I look from week 1 to 2 and say he's made progress? Can I look from 2 to 3 and say he's made progress? 3 to 4, he's made progress. And the answer early in the season was, not in my opinion. Not in my opinion. Can I say from week 6 to now he's made progress? Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely. And again, I wasn't beating up Lenore Sellers early in the year. I was beating up Dow Loggins. I was beating up Shane Beamer. I was going, you got this guy that's got all ACC potential in him. I can see it. But I don't see him getting better. And this is a dude that, and I say this respectfully, but I mean it. And Gamecock fans, tell me if I'm wrong here. I see in Lenore Sellers, greatest quarterback in the history of South Carolina football. And I know you guys got some doozies in there. I know you got some names. Lenora Sellers has the raw talent to be the greatest quarterback in the history of this program. I believe that. But when I don't see the progression from week 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, that's disappointing to me. Because for him to get there, you've got to grow him. I think the last 4 weeks, we can say he absolutely has. And as he has grown, it's opened up the field. So when Mizzou says, hey, we're taking Rocket Sanders away from you. And by the way, what a scheme on that shuttle pass, on that underneath pass to Rocket Sanders. What a scheme. You run everybody out to the right. You take the linebackers with you. Rocket hits the steps, cuts back, bang, just a little toss underneath. And you're basically saying to him in that spot, you're going to have to win a one-on-one battle here. Maybe two. You're going to have to beat one, maybe two, to get to the end zone. And that man just said, I'm a bulldozer. I'm a steamroller, baby. And took it to the goal line. Phenomenal. Great scheme. You took advantage of what Mizzou was doing. But Rocket Sanders played off the advantage Lenora Sellers created by being the threat he's become. I got to give props. I got to give props to Shane Beamer. I think you got to give props to Dow Loggins, and you got to give props to Lenora Sellers, because what those three have done the last 3 weeks opened up that touchdown for Rocket Sanders. And props to Rocket Sanders for winning the battle to get in. All right, we got John Blau coming up in a little less than an hour. We will talk about the Clemson win over Pitt when we come back here in a minute. We got your audio blitz, best audio we heard since last Friday. We have got your NFL scoreboard rundown, some shocking results from the NFL. We'll get to that coming up here in just a minute. All of that after the Lombardi Trophy winner of sports flashes, Lonzo.
Sellers has a long ways to go before he's better than Connor Shaw. Clemson basketball fell to the Boise State Broncos yesterday, 84-71. The Tigers were led by a 30-point effort from Chase Hunter, but had only one other starter in double digits and a total of only 8 points off the bench. Boise State out-rebounded the Tigers 42-34 while holding Clemson to just 37% from the field. The AP top 25 Week 13 sees the Oregon Ducks remain at number one, followed by Ohio State and Texas. Penn State and Indiana round out the top five, followed by Notre Dame, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Tennessee in the top 10. The top ACC team is Miami at 11, while Colorado is at 16. Clemson and South Carolina check in at 17 and 19. Tune in this Friday at 7 p.m. as the Burns Rebels continue their run in the playoffs against the Spartanburg Vikings. It's Burns versus Spartanburg right here on your home for Burns Rebels football, The Fan, Upstate.